Welcome to Hour 2 of Sports Saturday on KLBJ with hosts Ed and Ben Clements. They're taking calls at 512-836-0590 or toll-free at 877-590-KLBJ.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome to the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio on this Saturday afternoon. Our show brought to you by Coburn and Bastrop, Supreme Lending, Sue Patrick at 5222 Burnett Road, and Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements as we broadcast live from the lake. A little outside action here. Ben, good afternoon. We've been firmly watching this Masters this afternoon, so we're going to talk a lot about golf today.
Yep.
Ryan Estelton, my good buddy from golf.com, will join us in just a little bit to talk about what's going on. But the story of the day is Hideki Matsuyama, 10 under par for the tournament.
Hey, before we get to golf, I want to do a quick recap. There has been a national champion in college basketball. The little Baylor Bears of Waco, Texas, have been crowned the champions, defeating Gonzaga in, I'm going to say it, the most boring national championship in recent memory. Pop, I watched it from the great spot in Lavaca Street Bar over on Lavaca Street. It was the least exciting game I've watched in years. Proud for our friends over in Waco, but my Lord. That was a bad game.
It was a bad game, but Baylor made it a bad game because they were so good.
They were too good.
They were too good, and they beat a team that was undefeated on the year. Hats off to Scott Drew and the Baylor Bears as they won a national championship, only the second Texas team to win a national championship in basketball.
Yeah.
Of course, the first one was the famous Texas Western team, 1965,
yeah,
against Kentucky. But, man, oh, man, I don't know if I'm buying into everybody saying that this puts more – pressure on Chris Beard. I think he makes his
own
pressure.
You know why? You know why, Bob? Because that Baylor National Championship will be vacated by the year 2024, if you ask me.
See, I don't know, because, you know, there's always been the rumors. How does Scott Drew get those players?
There's no way in hell they should be getting these players. They were in suspension. Well, what's the word I'm looking for here?
They were on probation.
Probation
for a long time, yeah.
3 years ago. How does he get these guys to come over to Baylor when Texas and Kansas and Tech and A&M and God knows who else are recruiting these people? How do they do that? Not fair.
I saw a tweet.
Scott Drew's a crook.
No, he's not.
Sorry.
You can't say that on the radio.
I'm sorry. I say this, and I jokingly say this because we're Texas fans, and Baylor has slowly become a dominant force in the Big 12.
They have.
It's just jealousy of Texas fans. They won fair and square. They were the best team in the Big 12 and in the country all year long.
Exactly what you're talking about, Tom Pender's addressed earlier this week, because there was a Twitter war going on with a bunch of people,
yes,
talking about Baylor and they're cheating. And Tom Pender says he knows Scott Drew. He knows Scott Drew's father, and the last thing he would do would be to cheat. So I believe Tom Pender.
I say that jokingly. Scott Drew no matter what you're doing behind closed doors, he's an unbelievable coach.
Yeah.
It's something that, I'm sorry, Shaka Smart never did. The progression from these guys from freshman year to senior year, his guys have gotten better every single year. And that's something that us Texas fans have begged to see for 10 years. Am I right?
Oh, exactly.
It's player
player development.
Player development.
Yeah.
I don't know my words right now.
Total player development.
Yeah.
And that's what Texas has been lacking. I talked to a former Longhorn basketball player, and we were talking about Shaka and what's been going on with Shaka. And he said to him, what you just said, there was a lack of player development,
yes,
with the Longhorn program under Shaka.
And that's why Baylor has been so impressive, because Scott Drew doesn't have a bunch of five stars, a bunch of first-round draft picks, and yet they are a dominant team.
And
they get it done.
But they look like five stars by the time they left the Baylor
campus.
That
is why those two words come in handy, player development.
Yeah.
He takes guys from a grade F to a grade A-plus by the time they're done and ready to graduate or go to the pros.
And they did it so effectively, losers of only two games this year.
Yeah.
They lost to Kansas, and they lost to Oklahoma State in the Big 12 tournament.
And the Kansas game was, they were off for 2 weeks. They had the COVID breaks. Really, Baylor should have been a one-loss team this year, and
yeah,
it is all well and good, and it is well-deserved, because I'm sorry, Texas fans, we want to have every excuse in the world, but Baylor was the best team in the country.
And interestingly enough, Baylor could have done the same thing a year ago, because
yeah,
they were number one
yeah,
going into the tournament, the Big 12 tournament. They got canceled, and They were gonna make a big statement last year, but I'm happy for them. I'm glad it's in the conference, but I think
it's good for Texas.
Yeah, and I think
Texas basketball was really on shine this year with the Bears, with the Houston Cougars. There was a Texas Final Four, a Texas matchup. It shows that. Because look at Houston and Baylor. A lot of those kids are from Texas. They recruit the state of Texas, and obviously we're a state that's known for football, but the basketball in this state is really, really on point right now.
I think you're exactly right. Okay, let's get you up to date on Augusta National. Justin Rose has just birdied number 15. Hideki Matsuyama, he didn't birdie. As a matter of fact, he parred. Excuse me. Hideki Matsuyama is minus 11. Justin Rose is minus 8. Xander Schauffele, who had a good round, is at minus 7. Will Zalatoris is at minus 7. Corey Connors at minus 6. Jordan Spieth, after birdieing number 15, bogeyed number 16. So he is at 5 under par, 6 off the lead of Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah, Spieth, I'm not going to lie to you. After last week, him getting his victory, my friends gave me a lot of grief. I said, watch out. Jordan Spieth is not making the cut. He had the kiss of death winning last week. But he surprised me and I think a lot of people this week where he kept his composure, he kept that confidence up, and his game is still intact to go 2 weeks in a row playing solid golf.
I know we're going to talk about it with Ryan Aselt in a few minutes, but I don't know if Jordan can come back. He's 6 strokes off the pace right now.
With Matsuyama playing the way he is, he can't.
Matsuyama looks like a machine today. A shot of 65, but for people, I said this again, Scottie Scheffler is at even par. He has no chance. You cannot overcome an 11-shot lead. So I guess maybe the guys who are 6 and 7 maybe could overcome this
lead. Fun fact, though, about Scottie Scheffler, excuse me, don't listen to me. I'm thinking of Xander Schauffele. When I see Schauffele Xander Schauffele, watch out for him because he's played the Masters 4 years now, 4 years in a row. He's never finished outside the top 5.
Wow. And he almost birdied number 17, hit the pin. Will Zalatoris is playing number 16 now, the young man from Dallas, Tony Romo's friend.
But for Scottie Scheffler, we're talking, who had a great outing in Austin a couple weeks ago at the Dell Match Play, this is just, it's confident boosters every single week.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to win to know that he can do it. He's slowly creeping up the ladder of the PGA Tour, and I think within the next 2 years, we'll see him winning a major.
He's a member of the team. He really is. Yeah. He's well-respected. Okay, we're going to take a break. Ryan Aselta of Golf.com will join us after the break and get his thoughts on the Saturday round of Augusta. That's still going on. They're still playing. Last group of the day is on number 16. And again, Hideki Matsuyama has the lead at minus 11. We'll be back with my buddy Ryan Aselta right after this. Hey, welcome back to the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements, our show. Brought to you by Covert and Bastrop, Supreme Lending, Sue Patrick at 5222 Burnett Road, and by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements, and we welcome my good buddy Ryan Aselta of New Jersey on the line with us. He's a writer for Golf.com, and Ryan and I became friends because we got to play Augusta National the same time. Ryan, welcome back to KLBJ, and how are you this afternoon?
Ed, I'm doing great. Moving back to the Masters, getting to catch up with my old friend. What could be better right now? Thanks for having me.
Hey, Ryan, we're only 5 months removed from the last time these guys teed it up at Augusta National. What's been the biggest difference you've seen since last year compared to now?
It's got to be the golf course, right? I mean, it looks completely different, and it's playing completely different than what we saw in November with those soft conditions that Dustin Johnson just simply overtook and attacked back in November. Obviously, that game plan didn't work this time around because it was a different golf course. And DJ, he didn't go home for the weekend because he's got to stick around and put that green jacket on the eventual winner. But Dustin Johnson missed the cut, which was a shocker. But the course has been fiery. It's been fast. And, you know, just by the look of it, guys, I mean, I know a lot of the players talked about it early on in the week, Tuesday, saying that they've never seen Augusta National this fast, this early. Usually they play those practice rounds Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they get there Thursday, and the folks at Augusta National have, you know, cut those greens and fastened them up a little bit. But they were witnessing it on Tuesday, and we're seeing the result of that on Saturday now. I mean, they look like U.S. Open greens. That's how brown some of those greens are turning, and we're seeing it. Some of the guys airmailing the greens, one hop bouncing off the back of their approach shots on these greens. It's a completely different golf course from November, but it's completely different than we've seen at Augusta in quite a few years.
That's funny, Ryan, you mentioned that. I didn't even think about the fact that Dustin has got to stick around. That's got to be the worst 48 hours of his life, having to stick around Augusta, not doing anything. Maybe he goes plays Augusta Country Club.
I don't know. It happened to Ben Crenshaw. It's happened to other guys who had to stick around. But, yeah, that's, I wonder what he's doing.
Ryan, who's been the biggest surprise to you, whether it be guys not making the cut or guys that are in contention right now?
Well, yeah, I'll go twofold on that. The guys missing the cut were pretty surprising. Dustin Johnson, I couldn't imagine that he was going to miss the cut. That bogey on his 17th hole of his second round on Friday to miss the cut was a shocker. I think the way Rory McIlroy played surprised me. He came in flying under the radar. We knew he was going through some stuff with his swing. He's working with Pete Cowan a little bit. But to see the place that Rory is in, was eye-opening to me. The approach shot he hit on 10 yesterday into those trees, that was a lost ball. I think that was a reflection of where Rory's game is right now, and that's concerning to me because I'm a big Rory guy, and I think when he's at his best, he's by far the best player in the world. We're just not seeing it right now. A little surprising on the guys that are in contention. To be honest, I'm surprised Will Zalatoris has hung in there this long. He's had a little bit of a hiccup here on the back nine on Saturday, but he's a guy who still doesn't have his PGA Tour card. He's a rookie on tour, kind of grinding it out there, playing week after week, just trying to make enough money to secure his spot on the PGA Tour. And he's been in contention now for three straight days. So that's been a shocker to me to see. But by far, DJ, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy missing the cut and not even being a factor, it was quite the shock.
Now, son Ben has a theory. I want you to hear what Rory McIlroy should do. Okay, you tell Ryan what you think Rory McIlroy should do.
It's not as much of a theory. It's more of common sense. Am I right, Ryan? The guy's got to take off at least 4 to 6 months and get his mind right, get his game right, and take a break. I mean, for me at least, in my opinion, if I take off 2 months playing golf, I'll come back and I'll shoot a 72. I think he needs to take a long break and gather himself and maybe switch a few things up.
Yeah, I see where you're going, Ben. I don't think it's going to be that extended of a break. Certainly, he's going to take a few weeks off and try to find himself and continue working on his swing and what he's been working on. He's at a different place in his life, and he's still trying to figure out, how am I going to be a major contender? How am I going to be a major champion as a father now? I mean, let's face it, when he was winning his major championships, it was a completely different phase in his life and different responsibilities. So he's figuring out that balance right now. I think he'll take a couple weeks off, and then he'll come back. He doesn't have much time. I mean, he wants to play the PGA Championship at Kiawa, where he won by 8 strokes back a few years ago at down in South Carolina. So he's going to want to play that course where he's had such success. But I think a reset, a clear your head, keep working on your game, and then come back out there. He's going to get it. I mean, all these guys, look at what Jordan Spieth did, right? We thought Jordan Spieth needed 6 to 8 months off, and then he comes back and he wins at Valero, and he plays himself into contention at the Masters again. So these guys are so good that they can reset with a little bit of work, clear their head, and then they come back and let their talent take over. And I think that's what we're going to see from Rory, probably late spring into the summertime.
Okay, Ryan, you just kind of put a thought in my head, and call me crazy if you want, but is there something here? Jordan Spieth, since he got married, has really, up until last week, has not done much. Rory McIlroy, since he got married and had a kid, has not done much. Ricky Fowler, since he got married, has not done much. Is there some sort of correlation between these guys getting married and then continuing their PGA Tour career?
Hey, Ben, let me make sure my wife can't hear me over here, okay? So before I give you my answer to that one. Okay, here's my take on this. It's different. These guys played the game of golf for 25 years, say, only concentrating on golf. Their responsibility was practice, play, repeat. Okay. Now they've got other responsibilities, whether that is their marriage, their wife, or in Rory's case, having a little girl at home. There's a lot more going on. They come home from the golf course, and as we know, as Ed knows, as a father, that's when the real work begins, right? We come home from work, and we got the kids at home. That's when the real work begins. So it's just a lot different. But, you know, look at twofold, right? Dustin Johnson credits, you know, his relationship with Paulina Gretzky and that family as what's changed his career. So he's got kids.
Yeah.
He's got the racial relationship with Paulina. So I could see both ends of it, but it's just different, and it's learning how to do it differently. That takes some time, and it might take a little longer time with some of these guys.
All right, so I'm texting Scotty Scheffler as we speak. Do not get married until 2030.
He did?
He got married.
Oh, why did
he
I bet on him? We're done. We're done.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He
okay,
got married.
Well,
I met his wife at the Dell match play.
Okay, he's out. Okay, who's not married yet who we bet on? Well, Justin Thomas. Don't get married.
Okay. Smiley Kaufman must have three wives. How bad he's playing. Okay, let's talk about the man of the hour, Hideki Matsuyama. I think he came out of nowhere because Ryan in Austin a few weeks ago, he didn't do a darn thing. He was 0-3 in barbecue. He didn't do a thing, but he is in full flight after shooting a 65 today and has a nice lead entering tomorrow's final round.
You know what? He started showing signs a couple weeks ago, and Hideki's always been one of the best ball strikers on tour. The thing about Matsuyama has always been he doesn't have the putter to win a major championship. Even though he's contended, he has two top tens at the Masters. He has seven career top tens in major championships, but his putter has always let him down. What we saw today was a ball striking clinic, which we've seen before from Hideki, but he was draining the putts. And he came out of that rain delay that they had at Augusta today. He played eight holes and 6 under par coming out of the rain. That is going on a serious run, and that's why he was able to jump ahead by three, and he's going to have that lead heading into Sunday. Now, he's never been in that situation before at Augusta National. How does he handle that? As I like to say, what's on his mind as his head hits the pillow tonight, and how much sleep does he get, having never been in this situation before? The game is there, but I'm going to be curious to see how Hideki responds when he's got a 5-footer for par tomorrow on that front nine. What does the putter look like? If he's tentative, if he misses low side of the hole, that's a sign of bad things to come. And that's where some of these guys can come back, even from 3, 4, 5 shots back. As we know, anything happens, it doesn't really get going until the back nine on Sunday. Ed, you know that, right? You've been to the Masters. You've watched dozens and dozens of these things. There's still a lot to be decided come tomorrow afternoon.
Ryan, we were talking first hour about Matsuyama's impact on the PGA Tour. And I want to ask you, why do you think it is that on the LPGA Tour, the Asian-born players have made such an immediate impact on the game, and yet on the men's PGA Tour, the Asian players have not really had that same effect? We have a few very good players, but they have not been as dominant as the LPGA.
Yeah, I don't know why they haven't, when they've eventually got into the tour, why there hasn't been more success. At the younger level, the amateur level, and then early on in the careers, it seems like the Asian women, they bypass a lot of the college game. They go straight to the pros. They come ready to play professional golf, whereas on the men's side, it seems like the thing to do is to go play college golf. All of these guys that we're seeing it mainly played at least a couple years of college golf, where a lot of the Asian women that come over, they go from, you know, the junior ranks, the amateur ranks, straight to the professional level. And, you know, they're geared and they're trained over there very early on to be a professional, even at the age of 15, 16 years old. So they come over pro ready. A lot of the guys here, the trend is follow the college game, play a couple years, develop your game, and then try to make it on tour. Matsuyama's been, you know, one of the highest level talents on tour for going back almost a dozen years now. He just hasn't put it together in big spots, but he's won on the PGA Tour. So, it's a good question. That's the only thing I could equate it to that I've seen over the years, when especially I'm in the junior golf ranks and I live that life a little bit. It seems like the young amateur Asian women, they quickly turn pro, where the men, they choose the college game instead.
We got about 30 seconds. Does Hideki hang on, or does Justin Rose, Xander Schauffele, or somebody else win tomorrow?
You know what? I think it's a three-horse race. It's those three right there. I don't think Hideki's putter can hold up tomorrow, Ed. I think this is Xander Schauffele's time. He's been waiting for this.
Wow.
Talk about a guy who you're just waiting to crack and crack through and win the big one.
Yeah.
Schauffele is ready. He's got the game. If he gets a couple birdies early tomorrow and Matsuyama falters with that putter just a bit, this is Schauffele's tournament to win.
Wow. Ryan, thank you so much for the visit. Best to your family. And hopefully we'll be talking again soon. Thanks for being with us on the show tonight. See you later, buddy.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Great talking with you.
All right, Ryan DeSelta of golf.com. Good stuff.
Yeah.
We got to take a break for the news. News is next on News Radio 590 KLBJ.
Hey, welcome back to the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements. Our show brought to you by Supreme Lending. Thank you, John McClellan. Covert and Bastrop, they were closed today, but they'll be open tomorrow. Sue Patrick at 5222 Burnett Road. Go get all your Longhorn gear and your Blue Bonnet gear there. And Tito's Handmade Vodka. Okay, a look at the leaderboard. The final group is now playing number 18. Hideki Matsuyama of Japan is the story today. 7 under par, 65. He has a four-shot lead over Xander Schauffele, Mark Leishman, Justin Rose, and Will Zalatoris. At minus 6 is Corey Connors from Canada. At minus 5 is Jordan Spieth of Dallas. Jordan just lipped out a birdie putt on 18. He is 6 strokes off the pace. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements. Scotty Sears joins us back. Scotty, is Jordan too far back, 6 shots back, or does he still have a shot at winning his second Masters tournament?
Well, he's got a shot. I mean, you know, he shoots 3 under and Matsuyama shoots 3 over, and there you have it. But Matsuyama is pretty unflappable, and yeah. he's not unproven. He's finished in the top 10 in majors 7 times.
He was a low amateur in 2011 in this event.
Yeah, and he's finished second in the U.S. Open. You know, that's pressure that you've been under.
It would be pretty poetic if he were to win this year after 10 years removed from being the low amateur.
Yeah.
I want to ask you guys both, though, real quick. Is there any – so he has 4 – as of right now, if it ends – right now he's a 4-stroke lead. Is there any lead that is – unattainable for guys where they
well, 1996 Greg Norman had a 6-shot lead over
Nick Faldo,
and I remember this, and Ed, we talked about it on
that's
the other show.
That's a lot of strokes for Sunday.
That is a lot of strokes, and there really wasn't anybody else in the mix that year, and Ben Crenshaw had to stay over and present the green jacket to the winner. And we were getting on the plane to come back to Austin, and I said, well, Ben, I guess you'd be putting the green jacket on Greg today. Finally, he'll win his Masters. And Ben said, don't be so sure. Funny things can happen at Augusta.
Wow.
So that's 6 shots, and that's not with, you know, 10 guys within 6 shots. That was one guy that was really there.
Yeah, and Nick Faldo went on to win?
Yes, he did.
He won by 5.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay, so that's a little history lesson, because I don't know anything about it. I was 2 years old.
Okay. Greg Norman,
what happened?
78.
He shot a 78 on
67.
Yeah. He shot a 78 on Sunday?
He caught him on number 12, then it just totally went south. Yeah. Greg Norman had a famous, I guess, number 9 was kind of the start of his downfall, even though I read a piece on Greg Norman this week. He said during his warm-up, he said he felt terrible. He felt his swing was just totally out of whack. Butch Harmon was with him then, and
is news to me.
Yeah, the night before, there was a famous British writer who walked up to Greg Norman and said, even you can't F this up, Greg.
Wow.
Because it was a 6-shot lead.
He shot a 78 on Sunday on the Masters.
Yes.
And think back to that time, you know, there was a time period where Greg Norman was the best player in the world before Tiger.
Yeah, yeah, he has the longest streak before Tiger of number one in the world.
Yeah.
Because he was the original number one in the world.
Well, there you go. And so you ask about how big a lead is safe. You know, Matsuyama could explode tomorrow and bring 7 guys, 8 guys back.
And you're talking about Greg Norman, who had won a couple of British Opens.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So is that the worst Sunday for a leader of all time?
No, you got to go back to Jackie Burke. Remember that in 1958 on the windiest day, the windiest Sunday of them all, where Jackie Burke overcame, what was it, an 8-shot deficit?
Yeah,
Kim
Venturi shot 80, right?
Yeah.
And Jackie Burke shot 71.
Well, no, I'm saying for the wait, what did he shoot?
80.
Ken
80?
Venturi.
Yes.
Ken Venturi was going to be the first amateur to win, you know, ever, I guess.
Ken Venturi shot an 80 on Sunday as a leader?
It was unbelievably windy. They said the scoring average was like 77 that day.
Yeah, I know, but it's kind of unfathomable today to think of the leader going into Sunday shooting anything above a 75.
Scotty, our guest moments ago, Ryan Estelta, my buddy from golf.com, he picked Xander Schauffele. He said the time is now for Xander Schauffele, who will start tomorrow 4 shots back, and he will play. He'll be playing with Hideki Matsuyama tomorrow.
Well, I mean, look, Xander's due, and he's really steady.
Yeah.
So, I guess the question is going to be, from the time he tees off, is Matsuyama going to come back to the field a little bit?
Yeah.
Because if he shoots a couple under, it'll take a big effort by anybody to catch
him. Now, there's another guy that the Australian Mark Leishman, you like Leishman, who should have won a British Open. He lost in the playoff to Zach Johnson a few years ago. You like Leishman to come back tomorrow?
I think he has the ability to go low. I mean, he's big and strong. He's got a good short game. So, he certainly could go, he could shoot a 66, 67.
So, Schauffele, I think I mentioned this to y'all off air, maybe in the first hour, but Schauffele, he's played in four Masters now. He has scored in the top five in each of these Masters.
Phenomenal player.
And that's why, I mean, I know, 1-800-GAMBLER if you have a problem, but I was saying how I am so dumb for not putting – I saw that stat on Tuesday, and I didn't put a bet for my buddies in Vegas on Xander Schauffele top five. I don't know why I didn't, but I don't know what – he hasn't won yet, but when he's at Augusta, he's automatic.
He shot 4-under today, shot a 68 today. Hideki shot a 65 today. Will Zalatoris, the guy that Carl Jackson, Ben Crenshaw's caddy, really likes. If you were with us the first hour, we had Carl Jackson on Ben Crenshaw's caddy. He likes the look of Will Zalatoris, Scotty.
Well, and these guys are not just playing out the last hole. What Rose and Zalatoris are doing here is playing 18 to try to make a birdie and get in the last group.
Yes.
So they can put some pressure on Matsuyama.
Yeah, if you just joined us, Hideki Matsuyama shot a 7-under par, 65 today. He's in first place. Xander Schauffele with a 68 is at minus 7. There's a big crowd at minus 7. Xander Schauffele, Mark Leishman, Justin Rose, and Will Zalatoris, who plays out of Dallas at Merido Golf Club. They're all at minus 7. Jordan Spieth finished at minus 5. Jordan shot even par today. And man, oh man, he had his chances today, fellas.
Hey guys, so I'm looking at the odds for our friends from Vegas. And Will Zalatoris, guess what his odds were to win this thing?
200-1.
It was plus 6,600.
Wow. Which means...
So that's just 66-1.
66-1.
Is it Rose? Okay.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
That's still,
That's 66-1.
That's in, that's in the top five of, worst odds.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Justin Rose
maybe has, this is a bad one, but that's still pretty good.
I tell you what you could have won a lot of money on. That DJ would miss the cut and Jose Maria would make the cut.
Yeah. I told you Dustin was plus 550 to miss the cut. That's pretty good. What was Jose to make the cut?
Oh, God. Yeah,
he hadn't made a cut since 2014.
Well, he's been injured. He's been hurt.
Yeah.
So
how old is Jose?
55.
55 years old. He's won two Masters. He was a protege of Cebriano
Ballesteros. Who's the oldest guy to make the cut? The Masters.
Bernhard Langer, isn't it?
No, I think Langer could have broken Tommy Aaron's record this year, but Tommy Aaron, I think, still holds the record for making the cut.
Hey, wow. Well, I saw Phil earlier today was talking about how disappointed he was. He made the cut.
He's top 21 right now, Ben. He shot 69 today.
How he would so much love to win this tournament, how he's going to take the biggest effort ever, but how it's going to take somebody special to beat Jack Nicklaus winning the Masters today at age 46. Do you think we'll see somebody that do that ever again to win that old?
Well,
because Tiger's the only one that comes to mind that could really do it. But 46 is, you're competing against guys that are half your age.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, but there's some guys. I mean, Sergio's 41, 42.
He's capable.
I can see him playing good for another 4 years. Easy. These guys are so much more fit. Yeah. Than back in 1986.
Right.
46 when, is not young.
It's not young, Ben, but there's guys that are competitive on tour in their late 40s.
And I believe, Ben, the big equalizer, too, is now the 46-year-old guys are in shape and the equipment is so good and the balls are so good.
Yeah. So do you think Phil Mickelson, that is, will ever be able to compete again for the Masters, or do you think his time is done?
I would say he's competing, Ben, because right now he shot a 69 today, and Phil Mickelson has beaten Francesco Molinari, Joaquin Neiman, who's about 22, Scottie Scheffler, and John Rahm. So, yeah, he's competing, even though he's not he's number 21 now.
Okay, last question before we go to break. I saw this earlier. Rory McIlroy said he visited Tiger Woods this past week, said hello to him, and said he thinks Tiger could compete again in 12 months. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think maybe in a year, and I think it will be at this golf course at Augusta National because he knows this golf course. If he's going to make a comeback, he will do it here, but I don't think he will do it until he is so physically fit and ready to go. I don't think he wants to embarrass himself.
Scotty, you know him. You've seen him. What do you think?
I think this is going to be the hardest. Of all the things that Tiger's been through, this was a a major accident.
Yeah.
And you layer that on top of his other back problems and leg problems, all the things that he's been through. Let me just say this. It'd be the biggest comeback story ever. He's already had one of two biggest comeback stories ever, along with Hogan's in 51. But this would be even bigger if he comes back and even finishes in the top 10.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be major because of the horrific injuries he had. Here's Will Zalatoris putting for birdie on the final hole. He's going to miss it, but he should make par. Justin Rose made a long par putt, so it's going to be Matsuyama and Xander Schauffele playing tomorrow, Mark Leishman and Justin Rose playing tomorrow, and Will Zalatoris and Corey Connors playing. We haven't talked about the Canadian, Corey Connors, who's at minus six, and then Jordan Spieth will be playing with Brian Harman, the lefty, tomorrow. So it's going to be a fun afternoon, but I don't know. I don't know. We got to take a break, and after this break, we're going to make our predictions on who will win at Augusta tomorrow.
Justin Rose.
I'm going to say this right quick.
Justin Rose.
Zalatoris just putted out, got a par. He's in the third group from the end.
Less pressure.
Maybe he can post a score.
Okay, we're going to talk about that a little more. And we'll also got it. We need to talk a little Longhorn football. They had a scrimmage today. So I read some quotes from Coach Sarkisian. We're going to take a break. This is the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio. I'm Ed Clements along with Ben Clements and Scotty Sayers. We'll be back with more right after this. Hey, welcome back to the End Zone Club on KLBJ Radio. Ed Clements, Ben Clements, and Scotty Sayers. Okay, around the table, Scotty, who will win the 2021 Masters when the bell is rung tomorrow evening?
Justin Rose.
I would love it if Justin Rose won. I really would. I like the guy, and I think that, you know, Sergio got his Masters in a playoff against Justin Rose. I think Matsuyama.
I'm going to take Xander Schauffele. I think I'm with my friend Ryan himself. I think the time is right. I think he's going to come back from four shots to defeat the man from Tokyo, Hideki Matsuyama. And Ben, who did you like?
Justin Rose.
Okay. Our buddy Kyle Chandler has rejoined us again from our broadcast area. Welcome back, Kyle, and good to see you once again.
Hi, it's so great to be here. It's absolutely beautiful out here this afternoon.
Kyle, absolutely gorgeous.
Congrats on the new movie, Godzilla vs. Kong.
Thank you. It's doing very well.
I feel obligated to say that. I'll be honest with you. Between you and I haven't seen it yet. I've seen the Spark Notes. It sounds great. I hear nobody really wins. Spark Notes.
Is that like Cliff Notes?
Basically, yeah. But if you didn't want to read in high school, you'd read the Spark Notes of a book.
Yeah, and then
you'd
do the book report. Called Cliff Notes. Okay. I'm well aware of them. Yeah.
First question. Who wins in a fight? The original King Kong from 2005 or 2021 King Kong from Godzilla vs. Kong?
I don't know. You tell me, Ben. Are you really going to do this to me?
Yeah, I'm going to.
I mean, come on. You already said you're going to be
That's
nice
why I got
to
you here. I want to know the inside facts. Okay, really my question is, what was it like working with Peter Jackson? Because I'm obsessed with Lord of the Rings. That's my thing.
If you really like that King Kong movie, the original one, which I really had a great time.
I love that movie.
First of all, New Zealand's one of the most beautiful places on the earth. If you've never been there, it's two islands. And the South Island is the most gorgeous place in the world. I beg you to tell me different.
I bet.
Different than if you go visit. But he had been wanting to make a remake of King Kong his whole life. That was his dream. And he actually made it before that movie. He cut up his mother's mink coat to make a King Kong, and he made a movie as a kid.
Actually?
So when we were actually shooting that film, I remember we were looking at one of the first scenes we shot, and I was staring at him. And it was wintertime. He loves wearing shorts in winter with his big jacket, you know. And I walked up to him. I said, man, how does it feel after the shot? He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, how does it feel to be that little kid to get your first shot off on this big film? And he just sort of gave me a big grin, and it was just a really neat experience. And he and his wife and the people involved, it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. And that was a wonderful movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah. And I love the personability that they brought out of King Kong. And you'll see more of that in the second one than the first one. And these last two with Godzilla.
Yeah.
And But they're hard films to make because you got to involve the person story. But of course, what people really want to see, you know who the star of it is. Well, you know, so
Kyle Chandler's with us, noted actor. How's your buddy George Clooney? And let me tell you, I loved your movie, the space movie with George Clooney. I thought it was terrific.
I'm glad you know the name of the movie.
I don't know the name of the new
space
movie.
I'm just glad I'm a noted actor.
Noted actor. The space movie with George Clooney released during the pandemic was terrific.
Yeah, it was the space movie was it was shot over in England, and it was a good movie. And it was written by the young lady. The book was written. And then it was turned into a script by Mark Smith, who's a very good writer. He's got a lot of things coming out. Hell, I don't know what to tell you about it. It was a very good movie, and it was very appropriate for the time because it happened right as the pandemic was happening. We finished it. I came back from England literally weeks before things started shutting down.
Yeah.
So the storyline of that and the pandemic and the world closing up, it was the parallel between the two was just kind of incredible.
It was eerie. It really was eerie. Any more collaborations with the guy that I look like, George Clooney?
Okay.
Burl Ives?
Okay.
George Clooney?
I certainly don't hope ask. To be working with him later. I mean, we've done two things together. He's just fantastic to work with. These great people, and he likes having fun. He knows exactly what he wants. He doesn't give up on it, but he's still collaborative, and he loves having fun. And the sets are fantastic, and that's where you always do your best work, when you're really enjoying it and you're relaxed. And I just love the whole experience.
Hey, Kyle, we're going to make a headline grab here. Friday Night Lights, sequel.
Let me tell you something first. So there's something I didn't mention here. George Clooney, you know, Sexiest Man Alive twice. Yeah. You might have noticed.
You sound bitter about
people
this.
People might have noticed in People magazine that for gentlemen in their 50s, I won most... either eligible or handsome. Now,
are you eligible?
Well, my wife's over there.
She's right behind me right now.
Ladies, I am eligible. No, but that Clooney, he talks about that all the time, that sexiest man winning it twice. He's not going to win it.
Hey, Kyle, I don't think Clooney can grow that gray beard that you have right now, so don't cut yourself short. You're good.
Thank you.
Okay, I was going to ask you, though. Friday Night Lights.
Are you asking for a comment on that mustache of yours? Because that sort of, mustache of yours is,
thank you,
for lack of a better word, sexy as all get out, thank my you. Friend.
Thank you. It was all my friends tonight, all the ladies. The Kyle Chandler says my mustache is sexy.
I'm telling you, I don't know what bar you're going to. But
it's
you're
a clip-on.
Clean it out there. Huh? What?
It's a sticker.
Oh.
It's not real.
Oh, okay.
Friday Night Lights, though, it's the greatest show in NBC history. Everybody asks about it. Every single year you have, is there going to be a sequel? It's the man himself. Is there any chance?
No, I've been wanting to do it, but Connie Britton won't allow it.
Okay.
I mean, she's just... I mean, she appears to be a very nice woman, very kind and sweet, but it might not be the case if you were to know her like I do. She just refuses. She says it has something to do with my personality, but I just... That's all I hear.
Hey, do you think... this is kind of a real question, but if you hadn't filmed that, if you hadn't gotten involved in Friday Night Lights, do you think you'd end up in Texas?
I don't think I would have, because I used to drive back and forth from Georgia to L.A., mm-hmm. and I never dropped south into Austin.
Really?
I just never did it. And when I first came here, it reminded me a lot of Gwinnett County in Georgia, because mm-hmm. That was the fastest growing county in the country when I left there. And when I saw the stickers around here that said, keep Austin weird, I was absolutely, and I'm here 11 years now, but I was absolutely convinced that this is one of those places that might be doing that again, and it did. It was untouched at that time in my retrospect. Now Scotty and Ben, they've been here their whole lives, so things have changed. But even in the 11 years that I've been here, I never expected the growth to be like it has.
Did you expect this mass exodus from LA? Because I mean, you lived there for a while, and you kind of started the trend. It seems like everybody.
I'm
it's
not
true.
The Tippi Hedren of Austin.
But everybody from LA seems to move to Austin.
No.
Are you surprised by that?
I'm not surprised. I'm not going to get into the political aspect.
No, I'm not asking politically. Like, literally, just like everybody in LA is moving to Austin, and it's almost annoying for us Austinites, but I blame
not you.
You,
but other people. No, not you, but.
Well, this is going down a bad avenue. I have no comment on that, Ben.
No comment,
but
okay.
I'll talk to you as soon as we take these headphones.
Okay.
I'll tell you that.
I'll get the boxing gloves.
Yeah.
Okay, you're heading back to Toronto to finish the movie?
Yes, sir.
How long will that take?
I don't know.
When will the movie be out?
The movie will be out probably a year from the time I come back from there. It usually takes about a year. It's a lot of special effects and such. So
is it?
It's hard to tell, yeah.
Is there going to be a third Godzilla movie?
That I do not know. I do not know. I mean, it wouldn't be the third. It'd be like the 64th. I will tell people, though, if you've never seen the original two Godzillas, you really have to watch them, because the first one came out in about 40, I want to say 46. I could be wrong. But if you look at the spaces they used, you're talking about destruction in Japan after the end of World War II, and the references to the end of the war and to the atomic bomb, they're all there. And it's a very, very interesting film to watch.
We should also tell everybody, our listeners, go see Godzilla vs. Kong. You can stream it now. It's in theaters. It is exciting. It is empowering. It has the greatest acting in the world. And Kyle's in it. We got an Austin in the movie.
Yeah. Empowering.
Empowering.
Yeah.
Empowering. Thank you for being with us, Kyle Chandler. Always great to see you. Thank you.
I thank you so much. And thanks for all the great questions.
I got to go. I'm going to go get the boxing gloves. Y'all finish up the show.
Okay. Ben, thank you. Scotty, thank you. Kyle, as always, great to see you, my friend.
Yeah, I'm going to go get my knife.
Okay, go get your knife.
Golly, Matsuyama's putting two footers out here on the practice green. I mean, that's a bad sign.
Okay, so he's not going to win tomorrow.
He wants to win. Okay, we got to go. It's been fun. Thanks for listening to Sports Saturday on KLBJ Radio. For Scotty, for Ben, for Kyle, I'm Ed Clements. See you next week on the End Zone Club on KLBJ. Bye-bye, everybody.